Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
DSW's semi-annual sale is back. Take 40% off all clearance shoes in stores for a limited time. Literally every single clearance item at your DSW store is on sale right now. Sneakers, sandals, any style. If they're on the clearance racks, they're 40% off. So what are you waiting for? Don't sleep on these savings. Get to DSW ASAP. It's all or nothing, people. Shop the DSW semi-annual sale today.
Bring in Washington State's OC and quarterback, as we talked about, Ben Arbuckle and John Mateer. After going over the entire roster with Coach, my conclusion is this is a playoff-caliber roster. The schedule remains tough.
I was going to say, the schedule is brutal.
I think it's the toughest schedule in the country.
So they go Illinois State. They do host Michigan week two.
Prime time. That'll be under the lights there on ABC.
They're going to have to play in front of 20,000 Oklahoma fans in Philadelphia at Temple. Then they get Auburn at home. They get their bye week, their first bye week, then Kent State scrimmage. Then they've got Red River at South Carolina, host Ole Miss at Tennessee. I mean, we're talking about, and then they get, then they have a bye week at Alabama, Missouri at home, LSU at home. I mean, I guess you could say if there's going to be a three-loss team, their schedule maybe. But, man, that feels like you're going to have to really go 7-2 in those games, if I'm including Michigan.
Yeah, it almost feels like you have to beat Michigan. Primetime, at home, all the hype, anticipation, you've got to win that game.
Man, that has to be the toughest schedule.
I think it is.
I mean, that's absolutely brutal. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we get into the list. Also, Colin Wilson going to join us during hour number two. Stick around. You're listening to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Each and every day here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, we do a little thing called the list. Let's fire it up. Shamar Stewart. Yeah, Bengals first-round pick Shamar Stewart says he will not practice until he signs a rookie contract. And the only way he'll sign is if the Bengals change their stance about inserting a contract clause that he views as unfair to him, according to Pro Football Talk. Quote, in my case, I'm 100% right, so it should be a no-brainer, Stewart told reporters today in the Bengals locker room. The Bengals are insisting on a contract clause saying a default by Stewart in any year of the contract would void all of his remaining years. The Bengals have never insisted upon such language before. With their previous contracts, they've only made a void wipe out of the guarantees for the year in which the default occurred. Quote, I can't say what I really want to say, but it's their contract. They can do what they want with it, Stewart said. Stewart said he wants to practice, quote, very bad, but will not practice until he signs the contract. Stewart also, according to other Twitter reports, said he had the support of other players in the locker room encouraging him. All right, so can somebody help me? Defaulting on the contract, is that saying if he holds out again, the whole rest of the contract's voided?
He wants the same contract as Amarius Mims and I believe every other first-round pick where there's, as you said, quote, no default clause.
Right, and the biggest thing
is future guaranteed money?
So it sounds to me like they would wipe out all of the money, whereas if he voided the contract previously, it would wipe out 1 year of the money. But can someone explain to me what defaulting on the contract is? Is that holding out? Is that not playing?
I'm not sure.
I do think so. I am also sensitive
I'm reading that it just makes it easier to void guaranteed money, I guess.
From just a basic Google search, it looks like it's just any breach of the agreement. But that...
I guess this is where I come down. Like, I am sensitive to the fact of, like, I acknowledge oftentimes, like, the pylon effect can be real. And, like, when you have something that everyone kind of... a narrative that everyone buys into, you can just find the stories on top of the stories on top of the stories. It feels like the Bengals are well-earned.
It does. It does feel that way. And it felt like... didn't it feel like we were kind of getting out of it, right? When they gave Chase the big deal.
The question is,
Higgins.
I think the question is how much, how sympathetic are you to Trey Hendrickson's case? Because it feels like Burrow held their feet to the fire and was like, get the deal done with T and Jamar. And they're like, well, we did that. But I think the thing that's more infuriating now is, while I am someone that absolutely does not root for private equity in our sports, we have created avenues for these teams that are cash strapped to actually pay their guys, but they refuse to do it. Mike Brown was the one dissenting vote on bringing in private equity to the NFL. And so, like, it just, like, I don't know, like, to me, it's like, how many franchises get the high drafted quarterback and he delivers? Like, it's so hard just to, like, get the guy. You've got the guy, and it feels like everyone else would be breaking their necks, at least within reason, trying to build around him. Whereas it feels like the Bengals are more, like, the Brown family is more insistent upon, like, getting their way. I mean, they were even trying to leverage this into, like, stadium talk. They were flirting with the possibility of moving to Chicago to be the second team.
Well, and what I don't understand is, look, I'm not going to pretend to know the economics of Cincinnati, Ohio, but in the NFL, the most powerful league in the world that prints money, and you've got a generational quarterback and a generational wide receiver, and you've been to the Super Bowl, like, if you play it right, you should be able to make a ridiculous amount of money. Now, let me ask you this. I don't know. The Shamar Stewart thing just seems stubborn and kind of like they tried to throw something in there, and it looks like his agent was like, no, we're not signing this. No one else signs this. They're like, oh, okay.
George has something.
So I did a little bit more digging on this because I was also really curious. A better definition on the default in the contract. So defaults are rare. They happen when a player breaches the terms of a contract, typically by either sustaining an injury while participating in prohibited activity or committing conduct detrimental to the team. So obviously Stewart doesn't plan on triggering a default by any means.
Right.
And here's the other kicker. Even though Mims, his contract, doesn't have this clause on a default, most other rookie deals or most other contracts in the league do have a default clause. However, the Bengals are not backing it up with the signing bonus that a lot of these other contracts do. A lot of these other contracts that have the default clause push a bunch of the money up front in a signing bonus to essentially offset the risk so both the player and the team don't have to deal with risk if a default happens. And the Bengals are, it seems like they're essentially either trying to put the clause in to keep up with the rest of the contracts in the league, except the ones they already sold to their players last year, but they also don't want to give the signing bonus.
So,
which sounds about right for the Bengals.
He said today, did you read this quote? "I'm not asking for nothing y'all have never done before, but y'all just want to win arguments more than winning games, in my opinion.
Yeah, and for those that were curious, y'all is directed the towards the Bengals.
Dude hasn't played a game yet.
Oh, and he's kind of the guy that most people are like, man, I don't know about that pick. Like, it is definitely a traits over production pick, but I mean.
But I mean, is he all that wrong? I mean, we're talking about not even 12 months ago.
Well, I guess here's
they
the
signed a first round
here's
pick.
The question I have. Are the Bengals offering him a deal? Like, did the Bengals screw it up last year? Like, because it sounds to me when you read that last detail, they're offering largely this. Because what's never made sense to me is why do we have so many rookie holdouts now when the rookie contracts are so structured?
Well, we don't really. I mean, you get a case here and there, but most of them are signed, sealed, and delivered. It's not like what we used to see with quarterbacks and whatnot.
So I guess the question I have is, because of Mims' contract, is Stewart saying, give me that deal? But really what they did was they screwed up because they needed to get Mims on the field last year.
Because they desperately need linemen.
Right.
Maybe.
And so they screwed up that contract, although it seems to me like there is some middle ground of, okay, you can keep the default in there, but don't tie it to the signing bonus. Or it seems like, basically, it seems like he's upset that they're trying to both withhold the upfront money and include the default. Whereas it feels like if you want the default, you're going to have to back up on the signing bonus.
That's what I understand. Yeah.
I don't want this for Burrow. He's too much fun.
I agree.
And, like, God, their defense was so bad last year. Like, ugh.
It was so bad, and Trey Hendrickson was one of the best defensive players in the league, and you might not have him. Now, ultimately, you get these things kind of worked out. But he's expected to make $16 million with a cap hit of 18.3. As pointed out, he earned first-team All-Pro, finishing second defensive year player of the year voting. Myles Garrett, $40 million. A year, Daniil Hunter, 35.6, Max Crosby, 35.5. Quote, I'm not going to apologize, this was him last month, for the rates of the defensive ends being paid in the National Football League.
Yeah, and then apparently he got into it with Taylor. Like, oh, God. College basketball rules. All right, this according to Jeff Borzello of ESPN. The 24-25 National Championship wasn't that long ago, but the men's college basketball landscape has shifted completely. Nearly 2,700 players entered the transfer portal prior to the April 22nd deadline. More than 100 players entered their names into the NBA draft before the 26th deadline, and dozens of high school seniors have flipped commitments following roster additions. No, wait, I was trying to read the rule. They hyperlinked the wrong story.
I hate when that happens.
I'm trying to be like of the opinion that, like, all right, when people freak out about Twitter's so much different now, it's like, I don't know, man, I haven't noticed that much difference. Like, now it feels like shifting through and everything is.
Are you talking about the coaches' challenges?
Yes.
Coaches' challenges are coming to men's basketball at any point in a game to review out-of-bounds calls, basket interference, and whether a secondary defender was in the restricted arc.
All right. Are we also cutting down on reviewing every ball out of bounds?
The NCAA playing rules oversight panel on Tuesday approved changes to help enhance the flow of the game in men's basketball. Changes include a coach's challenge at any point in a game to review out-of-bounds calls, other enhancements to help the flow of the game, focus on the points of emphasis for officials. This will include directives to address delay of game tactics, limit time spent at the monitor, thank God, improve game administration efficiency, and reduce physicality. Under the coach's challenge rules, teams must have a timeout to request an instant replay challenge.
They also approved a change to the flagrant foul rule on plays when a player makes contact to an opponent's groin. Officials now have the option to call flagrant one. Previously, officials could only call a common foul or flagrant two, which results in the player's objection. The problem is, to me, they have not gotten rid of, it's still going to review everything under 2 minutes, and you know as well as I do, when they just get under the microscope, they're still just going to review everything.
Probably.
I mean, that's the biggest problem to me during the tournament, during any college basketball game, is at the end of the game, the ball goes out of bounds, and every kid just puts their finger up.
For the replay?
Yeah.
Yep.
Lee Corso. All right, we now know what Lee's final game will be for College Game Day. It will be the Texas-Ohio State game. And there were some questions because Alabama plays Lee's alma mater, Florida mm-hmm. State, on that weekend. So where would the grand finale be? But we did learn today from Game Day's official account that it will be at Columbus, Ohio, ahead of the Week 1 matchup of Texas and Ohio State. They point out also that this is where Lee, Columbus is where Lee made the first ever headgear pick.
1996, first time he threw on the headgear.
Is it really that long?
Yep.
This is one of those ones where I'm glad we're finally doing it, because like it's been a rough watch. Now, I would also argue the last few years, the conversation around, like, they're only putting him out there for a couple, one segment. And
he's
so,
out there to, what, open the show, and then he does the picks, but he's out there very little. As he should be. The dude is
right, and he's had
90 years old.
And he's had strokes, but it is the end of an era.
Oh, I mean, is he in the College Football Hall of Fame?
That's a great question.
He should be. I am of the belief. And
I'm going to say no because of his win percentage, right?
It's not because. No, I think he should be in there for his media personality.
For his contributions to the game. Well, my argument was going to be before they changed the rule so that Leach could be in, Leach should be in for just contributions to the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because, we all joke how easy it is to get into the Basketball Hall of Fame. Everyone's in the Basketball Hall of Fame. But I think there's something unique about that in the sense that, people who are, to your point, influential to the game are there. And, I know there's, the Ford Frick Award, I believe, is for media members that go into Major League
Baseball's Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame. We got to figure it out for college football and the NFL, because whatever you think about Mel Kiper, he should be in the Hall of Fame.
Lee Corso was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2003.
Good. Okay.
But all no, right. I agree with you. Mel invented, that's what I always love is when everyone was, freaking out during the draft about Mel. It's you do realize Mel invented the NFL draft.
We don't have
on
it.
On television.
If not for Mel Kiper.
Yes.
And it has become its own season. How many people out there, their livelihoods are based on the NFL draft? Daniel Jeremiah, Todd McShay, there's draft networks out there. I mean, who else do we have? Who's the new guy over at ESPN?
Miller?
Matt Miller, yeah. I mean, so you got all these people. So, but yeah, it is. No, you're right, man. It's an end of an era. And yeah, it's been a hard watch these past couple of years, no doubt. I'm sure they'll do it upright, as they tend to do. And look,
ESPN's very good at celebrating themselves.
They are. And I would say pretty confidently that I think College Game Day, I guess you could argue inside the NBA is up there. I think College Game Day, for how long it's been on, has continued to be the gold standard for pregame shows.
Well, I think College Game Day actually did something that I think is really, really difficult. College Game Day got to the point where they got stale and they actually did have to reinvent it. And they have done it. And if you've watched College Game Day the last couple of years, it's clearly better.
And I just think it's so, I loved, and they still do it, the times when they go to a unique place like James Madison, I think that's when they're at their best. When they go to somewhere that you don't know much about, and they just kind of take that place over and they embrace it. And look, man, I mean, look at the fans that show up for it. I mean, it's a damn circus.
Well, I think those two things are related. I think part of what you realize is like so much of that kind of television working is the audience. And when you go to Alabama for the fourth time, or you go to Columbus for the fourth time in a season, like, there's just fatigue. But when you go somewhere they haven't gone before and the crowd's just on fire, like, it makes for a completely different scene.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, when Katy Perry showed up on set for the Ole Miss, was that Ole Miss Bama?
It was Ole Miss Alabama 2014. I mean, watched from backstage Katy Perry eat a corn dog. That was something I did not have on my bingo card.
That's pretty wild. I mean, she was at the peak of her powers then, too.
Yes.
She showed up at game day.
And you're talking to somebody who had been spreading the Katy Perry gospel since the One of the Boys album. Like, waking up in Vegas still goes.
Did you get a picture with her?
No, I was actually working. And I'm not that guy either. The closest I've ever done to a celebrity thing was I saw John C. McGinley in CVS at Malibu. And he, of course, was Dr. Cox on Scrubs, and I loved Scrubs. And so I just thanked him. I thanked him for Scrubs. And he was like a super nice guy. That's the closest I've ever. I was in Malibu the day after Britney shaved her head, and like, it was hilarious to like watch everybody going to like the spot, the barber shop or whatever that she was at. Like, there were like people like recreating the crime scene.
Speaking of Scrubs, the janitor, what's his name?
Neil Flynn.
I watched Rookie of the Year with my son this weekend. And I'm like, oh, he's the first baseman.
First baseman. Don't ever forget Hot Ice.
Oh, yeah. That was Harry.
Harry. Yes. The other thing I was disappointed in Scrubs.
Oh, no. Marv.
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 It's also Daniel Stern, who I think directed Rookie of the Year, by the way.
He wrote it.
It's
I don't know if he wrote it, but it was a Daniel Stern film.
I'm pretty sure he directed it.
Yeah, that's what it was.
My buddy Justin Moore is friends with Thomas Ian Nichols. We had him on the show once. Like that I was like, I always forget you actually have friends that are celebrities. quickly before we take a break and get to Colin, the NCAA's "Don't Be a Loser" campaign. Turns out it worked. Maybe according to the NCAA, it worked. Athletes were targeted in 15% of abused flagged media by data science firm Signify during the men's and women's basketball tournament this year, down from 42%. Sports betting related abuse dropped 23%, the study found. The men's tournament featured the fewest outright upsets by betting underdogs, 14, since the field expanded to 64 in 1985. Sure, that had nothing to do with it. And then also, the women's tournament was down 83%. I'm sure that had nothing to do with Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese dialogue. But the NCAA is going to view this as a success, so I'm just super happy for them. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, College World Series is set. Colin Wilson of the Action Network is going to join us next, right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices. At your DSW store or DSW.com.
Yeah. Colin Wilson covers college football for the Action Network. Also covers college baseball for Project 3 Straight. You can follow him on Twitter at underscore Colin one. Going to preview the College World Series with us. Colin, I guess let's start with your Hogs. So we've got Hogs and LSU for the fourth time this year, I believe, right? Correct, they did not mean the SEC tournament. I think that's correct.
No, there's more time, yep.
This will be the fourth time. One game went to extra innings, and then LSU's won the series 2-1 this season. But it feels like these are probably two of the best teams in the field, yet here they are battling in the opening night, or I should say maybe it's the second night, but they're going to be battling in game one. How do you kind of project the field when you factor in that the two best teams are playing each other to start?
Well, I'm not going to be the one that complains that there needs to be reseeding when it comes to college baseball, because your slot is your slot, you know, 1 through 16. It actually makes it easiest on us as handicappers to say, well, I already know that this 2-seed is going to advance and play this 3-seed way down the line, and that helps me pick my brackets and my future adjustments. I mean, if they reseeded everybody, it would make it just a little bit tougher. So I guess it's okay that Arkansas has to play LSU, and likewise. I mean, Arkansas just ran through Tennessee, and you got your Murray States of the world still out there hanging out. You got your Louisvilles who wasn't even going to make the tournament. But I'm not going to complain, because if you're going to win the college national championship, the College World Series, you're going to have to go through everybody. I think what you mentioned was LSU took the series in Alex Box in Baton Rouge. I believe that series was May 9th. You have to pay attention to that first game. It went to extra innings. Those two pitchers were Zach Root and Cade Anderson. That's what you're going to get in this game. This game should be no more than minus 115 either way. If you see any money going any other way, then that's where the value is going to be when these lines, some of them have started to trickle out. But you're going to get Cade Anderson, who really struggled with this Arkansas lineup. He surrendered 7 hits and a walk. He left 9 runners stranded. I mean, Arkansas just left them all out there on the bases. Zach Root was perfect in that game, and then the bullpen blew it for Arkansas and went to extra innings, and LSU was able to pull it off. This is probably the hardest game to handicap, and I would expect these two teams to meet each other again in bracket two. More importantly, Arkansas doesn't want to see Anthony Ianson. Now, I know that he just went game two. He'd only be on 6 days rest. He completely shut down the Arkansas lineup in game two of that Baton Rouge series. Yeah. I believe he had 11 Ks, 7 innings. If Arkansas can avoid Anthony Ianson, they'll do all right.
You know, Colin, when you look at it from a betting standpoint, and I want to get your thoughts on all of these teams, and bracket one is fascinating because you've got, you know, kind of an eclectic group over there. But from a betting standpoint, would you say that the loser of the Arkansas-LSU game will become kind of an intriguing opportunity? And then I guess, let's say Arkansas loses or LSU loses, obviously one of them will. What does their depth look like to get back to get a rematch against that SEC foe? Because it looks like, to the, you know, layman's eye, that UCLA and Murray State seem to be kind of the dead men walking in that bracket.
Yeah, Murray State, and all credit to them. Could they beat UCLA in the first game? Absolutely they could, because their main driver behind everything has been their pitch selection. They are one of the best in the nation in strikeout-to-walk ratio. But the problem is they're facing a UCLA team and a Michael Barnett starter who's only had 18 walks in 81 innings this year. So Murray State's not going to get the free passes. They're not going to get the chances to kind of show how great they are with pitch selection. And plus, think about Murray State from this perspective. You have to have a bullpen to win in Omaha. There are rain delays. There are days where they're playing 3 or 4 games because of weather. You have to have a bullpen to be able to stretch us out. And Murray State, they have the worst bullpen numbers of any team coming in. UCLA probably just doesn't have the hitting. But LSU and Arkansas, I to get back to your point, the team that loses that game, I think absolutely could come back. But the team that's better suited to come back is LSU. And that's because Arkansas used Gage Wood against LSU and absolutely got annihilated. Gage Wood did not look very good against Tennessee. He only lasted 4 innings the other day. LSU is the one from a starter perspective that can come back through the loser's bracket. So if LSU loses to Arkansas on Saturday night and you see a 5-1 out there or even better than that, I would absolutely buy the Tigers.
The only problem I have with that is I'm trying to do it off the top of my head. When's the last time somebody lost game one and came back and won it?
Yeah, it's funny. I was researching that last night. I believe I came up with Oregon State in 2018, who beat Arkansas, by the way.
Yeah. nothing happened in that game, right?
Yeah. So there have been times where teams have gone into the loser's bracket and I actually ended up winning. The only team that's ever done that is LSU in 2023 with Paul Skeens. They lost the very first game of the tournament, went on to win everything. So, is Anthony Ions and Paul Skenes. I guess we're going to find out.
Are College World Series unders still a thing?
Yes, they are absolutely a thing. I'm glad that you asked that because everybody's so used to overs and the ball just flying out of the field. People need to realize that from a park factor's perspective, this is the Seattle Mariners. This is not Coors Field. It is a park factor's perspective. It is 0.85 with one being a neutral. All these teams that are playing in this have a park factor's over one, which means the ball flies out more than it does any other place. Charles Schwab is extremely deep to the center field, to center, to left, to right center field. Plus, think about these game times. And I'm just, everybody can go read what I wrote over Project 3 Straight. I have a map of where the sun rotates around Charles Schwab Field. And I'm just going to tell everybody, when you have an MLB playoff game or you have a College World Series game, between the hours of 3 to 5 o'clock, the shadows hit the pitching mound to the home plate. And everybody knows from a gambling perspective that's an under city. But keep in mind, wind blows in hard here. It's more spacious, and the shadows play a factor. Unders are back in play in Omaha.
And I think the other factor is there's a lot of room in foul territory, so
yes,
more it is more of a pitcher's park. Like you, but I just remember when they first moved into Ameritrade, there was like one year where one of my buddies got on like, "Hey man, we need to bet the under in every one of these games." It was like 17, like it was just insane. I know they brought the fences in a little bit, but and obviously the new baseball has changed it, but it still feels like to me like it's still under city.
And what's sad is last year I think everybody kind of got the idea that we could play overs again, but you had Jack Cags.
Yeah.
Right? You had Jack Caglio. I mean, you had these Jace LaViolette for Texas A&M. You just had these monster hitters that were just powering everything over. But trust me, it is an under ballpark.
Colin Wilson joining us here, helping us preview the College World Series. And it does feel like Bracket 2, and look, you're going to be there on Saturday night. The atmosphere is going to be off the charts for LSU and Arkansas. I'm sure the Rocco's Jello Shot.
I was going to say, do we have odds for?
I mean, it's just LSU versus Arkansas, right? Whoever goes deeper is going to win the Jello Shots. I mean, I think that's a given. What?
I talked to Rocco's last year. I went in and talked to the guy that runs Rocco's, and you know, because I was covering it from the press box last year, the whole entire series. I went and talked to him, and he said, "Listen, I don't talk about this very much. Yes, Arkansas won the Jello Shots in 2022, but in 2023, we had a donor call from Baton Rouge and immediately buy 20,000 of them. And there is a guy in Baton Rouge that will call and make sure LSU is above everybody, and he will donate as much money as possible to make sure that happens. So if there's an odds board out there and you can bet your buddies, bet LSU because they have a donor that's crazy about this Rocco Shot board.
68,000 in yeah. 2023. Just ridiculous. But
I contend those shouldn't count. I'm all for Rocco's, and I know that I understand it goes to a good cause. That shouldn't count to the leaderboard. Like
I agree, they're
donating money to a food bank. Like, we've got Jeffrey all fired up about
it. Donate the money to the food bank. Like I'm all for the charity, but like my deal is I want Jello Shots consumed. Like we have to have rules.
Well, the food bank needs to have LSU on it. He'd call
That's
them up
true.
Too. So.
All right, let's get to bracket one because it does feel like LSU Arkansas. If one of those teams is not in the championship, it would be an absolute stunner. The bracket one is it feels like completely wide open. Arizona plays Coastal Carolina. The Shants won the title back in 2016. Oregon State, as you alluded to, they've won it in recent years. I mean, you've got what the Sun Belt, you've got the ACC, you've got the Big 12. Oregon State plays an independent this year. How do you handicap bracket one, and who do you think is the most likely team to emerge out of that bracket, Colin?
Well, we mentioned that in 2023, LSU is the only team to go straight in the loser's bracket and come back and win it all. So really what I look for is who's winning these first two games, and then let's just go ahead and try to handicap who's going to be the game two starters against each other. In the first one, I came up with Coastal, and there were a bevy of reasons. I know Arizona is playing great ball right now. And this park suits them because they're not a home run hitting team. They're top 50 in doubles, and they lead the nation in triples. They want to slap that wall and run around those bases and just let that Coastal defense work. Now, both teams are equally good in fielding percentage, but there's one thing that Coastal does that not really anybody else can do, and that is bunt. They are ninth in the nation in sacrifice bunts. Every Arizona pitcher is going to be expected to come off the mound and be expected to make outs at first, second, and third base. When you put up Cameron Flukey, the starter for Coastal, against Owen Kremkowski, it's not good for Arizona whatsoever. Flukey has been absolutely unbelievable this year, especially he hasn't allowed more than three earned runs since March 29th. He always goes at least 89. He goes between 89 to 99 pitches. He is for real in the first game. I think they're going to meet up with Oregon State after that, because Dax Whitney got moved as the game two starter, the game one starter against Florida State, and he's a freshman phenom. He's allowed just 6 earned runs over his past 5 starts spanning 26.2 innings, and he always throws 100 pitches in a game. He has been on fire as a freshman, and Dax Whitney is the name that you need to know. Poor Louisville, I'm not going to bag on them for pass. They've gotten hot at the right time of the year. But this Oregon State, their lineup right now, if you didn't see the wall of beers, like the amount of home runs and the beers that were drank in Corvallis.
Yeah, but did you see the roof of beers in Louisville?
Yeah, I heard about the roof of beers.
My bros out in left field, man. You know, not that my pale ass gingerness can talk, but like, can we get a little sunscreen, or a little sun tanning? Yeah. There's a lot of paleness out on those roofs out in the outfield.
And we need a better ratio of female to male in those roofs. But
it was dude time. It was broing out.
It was dude time. But the handicap bracket one. Coastal will throw the better pitcher in game two with Jacob Morrison. He projects to me about -135 to -160, and that depends on if he faces James DeCrimmer, Ethan Kleinschmidt, or Eric Segura of the Beavers. It doesn't matter. Jacob Morrison for Coastal is going to be favored for all of them. I've already laid a bet on Coastal +130 to win bracket one. I am now sizing up both my LSU and Arkansas futures and saying, how much do I need to bet on this Coastal 6-1? But I've got Coastal winning this. I believe what their head coach said. They are for real. They are not an underdog. And their pitching in game two is what's going to get them across.
Let me tell you what, those fine young men last week in Auburn, really, I cannot say enough good things. But you are 100% right about the bunting. It is funny to watch teams that still bunt and watch teams try to defend it. Because it's like they're just, they don't see it. I think the other thing that's interesting to me is UCLA was one of those teams that I feel like everyone in the South was complaining about hosting a regional. And they've like quietly taken care of business. I've watched them twice and I still have no idea if they're any good. The other thing though that's kind of weighing on me is we've been talking about, you know, what works in terms of at Omaha. Murray State is not just bombs away. Like Murray State is like timely, put the ball in play, make everyone like make plays. Like I don't know. There's just something about maybe this Murray State team. Like I just can't quit them, and I don't know why.
Right. So if you want a live bet, which I'm going to be,
because they're never dead. That's what it feels like to me.
Exactly. So I think the one stat that everybody needs to know is that Murray State is 11th nationally in strikeout to walk ratio. They do not strike out, and they walk a lot. And they are out of 307 Division I programs. They're 11th in that. So whoever is their hitting coach deserves a raise and probably a head coaching position. The problem is, when I say from a live betting standpoint, Michael Barnett, the starter for UCLA, the fact that he's only thrown 18 walks the entire season is just mind-boggling. But the rest of that staff is bad. I mean, their xFIP is 5.9. Their team FIP is 5.9. Their ERA is a little over 4.5 as a staff. So once Michael Barnett is out of that game for UCLA, if you have a ticket on the Bruins, you better cross your fingers, because Murray State's pitch selection at the plate is insane. But again, Murray State after that, I don't know. It feels like Oral Roberts, feels like Kent State from 2012. It just feels like a 4 seed that could flame out because they don't have the bullpen to make a run.
It does not feel like Fresno. Like when Fresno won it as a 4 seed, everyone will tell you like, hey, that was a team that underperformed all year and they got it together. Like that was their story. And there is no question, like, man, even their starters, like, it's not even just their bullpen. It's like, I will say this, betting Murray State games is a thrill ride because nothing's ever dead either way. Like, it doesn't matter. I mean, what, they're up like 12-3 on Ole Miss.
12-3 on Ole Miss, yeah, they won 12-11.
Yeah.
They're a clinic at the plate. I mean, they're Kevin Youkilis. You know, if you want to get some Moneyball references in there, that's what they are. I mean,
how about that kid yesterday? What, he led off the game with a bomb and then hit another? That kid was legit. For Murray State.
I mean, these guys just absolutely swing the stick. I mean, I do also think, like, should we factor in the fact that Arizona's in here despite losing 18-2? Like, because Tim and I were talking about on Friday that I was like, you know what would be the worst thing in the world is, like, if you're North Carolina, you win 18-2 and you don't win the series, like, and here we are.
Right.
Like, I just wonder. I get it, it's baseball, one game, throw it away, but it's like, man, I did see that.
Yeah, what's funny about college baseball is once coaches have submitted, they'll throw all of their junk Tuesday, Wednesday guys out there on the mound. That's how those games get. And you know what? If you're taking an under and something like that happens, it could get ugly.
You just tip your cap. You're like, all right, well, this is it didn't go my way.
Colin, before
so I do,
we let...
I do think UCLA should only be favored by minus 120. So that what is that number out there right now? Like plus 210 on Murray State?
Yeah,
I take the run line easy when they release it.
All right. I got to ask you this, because not only are you Woo Pig Suey through and through for baseball, obviously you are for football as well. And we were talking about Memphis, and from a situational standpoint, and Colin, you know me, I love my situational spots. I think the Arkansas-Memphis game is brutal for your pigs when you've got Ole Miss and then you've got Notre Dame the week after sandwiched in between to go to the Liberty Bowl. What's your outlook on Arkansas football, and do you think that's a tricky spot September 20th at Memphis?
I think it's absolutely a tricky spot. I mean, you're right about the schedule. It's there's no bye weeks involved here, so we have to go to Ole Miss, right? And then what, we're going to drive back to Fayetteville? By the way, that's not like an easy drive through the Delta. And then we drive all the way back across on I-40, right? And then we got
behind every truck going to Walmart in the history of the world.
And real quickly, before you dive into that, can you put into perspective hosting Notre Dame? I know I'm a Notre Dame fan. Oh, everyone's so big. It's got to be one of the biggest games and most anticipated home games in school history, right?
It's already being talked about. Like, I go to the gym. I live in Fayetteville. I go to the gym. It's being talked about. I go down to campus. My son's taking summer classes. Like, it's being talked about there. Like, it's Notre Dame has somehow become a bigger game than anything else that's on our schedule. And that's quite interesting, you know, because, we have a pretty good list of teams coming to town. We got LSU coming to town. We got Texas coming to town. And you've got, I'm sorry, I got that reversed. But, the fact that Notre Dame has become the biggest team on our schedule, and we play an SEC schedule, is really surprising to me, and we're talking about it already. And this is a team where there's not that much enthusiasm. I mean, there's no way we're going over 5.5. Everybody wants a free bet. I make it 4.7. We ain't going over 5.5. Sam Pittman gets a bonus at 5 wins. I think we only get 4. Just we're going under. I've already talked to you, Tim, about it. It's going to be an ugly game. I'd take that Notre Dame spread, so, you know.
I think that Ole Miss game is always interesting. Like, I know last year it got out of hand, but that's always been a game that is just like, it's no matter what the spread is, what the total is, like, take the over, and then the game just gets drunk in the first quarter.
But isn't that lane? That's lane, though, right? Because every time Ole Miss is in a game, they play the level of competition, because if they don't lose to Kentucky last year, they're playing in the college football playoff. I mean, that's just typical lane every year.
Well, it's just like, you can tell, like, whenever he gets, like, last year, he needed to probably be more conservative with that team. But it's like every time someone dangles, hey, you want to get into a video game? Like, he just can't help himself. He's like, yes, I absolutely do want to do this.
Had a defense that led the nation in havoc. You could actually sack anybody and score a touchdown. But that's, I'm not the coach.
Colin, we really appreciate it, my man. Great stuff.
Yeah, talk to you guys soon. Thanks for having me.
Colin Wilson of the Action Network. How are you playing this? I've been like spot betting.
Dude,
I didn't love anything last week.
You know what's funny real quickly is and I know we got to hit a break, is I keep track of all my bets. And, college baseball, the first bets I put in, obviously, are once the NCAA tournament rolls around. I'm not Colin. Colin's following this thing since, like, February. And I hit my first, like, 3 bets. I was like, look at me. I had, like, Ole Miss under in the SEC tour. I think I've lost my last, like, 7.
Coastal Carolina was good to me.
I need to give up. But yeah, I don't know. I think I like Colin's mindset of kind of betting the bracket that is not with LSU and Arkansas. So he likes Coastal. They're a minus 230 favorite against Arizona. So maybe Coastal Carolina to win that bracket should be the way that we look at it.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we tell your story next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company. I need you on FM, ESPN. All right, Tim, for today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story, I'm going with Brandon Cooks. Not Brandon Cooks, beg your pardon. I'm going with James Cook on why he was at OTAs despite basically sitting out. Quote, I like my money, so that's why I'm here. He's here literally just so he doesn't get fined. I do respect the guys that show up and just sit out more so than just holding out.
Just show up and don't practice. I kind of like that one.
Yeah. I can respect that. All right, my man. We'll talk to you again on Friday.
Yes, sir.
He is, of course, Tim Murray. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, for Tim, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.